Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the desert we dwell. And it's episode 161.
It's a fucking fly in here.
Yes, it is really buzzing annoying. Right around your head.
Okay, right, I don't smell that bad.
This fly says different. I've read books, i.e. comics, that show that flies mean that you smell.
Right, yes.
Yeah, it's a surefire sign.
Yeah, that's upsetting.
How are you, Nick?
Well, apart from smelly.
It's a hot day.
It's a hot day.
Yes.
The heat wave. We're in the fucking heat wave, remember?
The heat wave, which one of our darling Patreons did give us the description of what a heat wave is. For those of you who don't know, over here in England, it's basically summer. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's
summer.
Mildly warm.
It's warm. It's nice out because we're so not used to nice summers over here. It's just, in the past
30 years ago, maybe. For the past 15 years, or so.
Not in June. I would argue that it usually kicks in around about July, August.
Nah.
That's why everyone's saying it's a heat wave. They go, it's unprecedented.
It's not. It was unprecedented apart from last week.
You should really do the weather, Nick.
Yes.
You just spend the whole time yelling at people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, episode 161. You're well. Happy.
Yes, apparently.
Surrounded by flies.
Surrounded by flies.
Oh, good. Any poisonings this week?
That fly. Oh, he's gone.
Oh, he took the hint.
Yeah.
You've scared him off.
I silenced him with my scorn. There are now a very chastened fly who's sitting in a corner thinking about what he's done.
He knows who's boss.
I am Lord of the Flies. No, that's not right.
Have you read that book? Did you just look at the title?
I just looked at the title and go, oh, that sounds really cool.
It's about a bunch of guys who just have flies as their servants.
Yeah.
And good times were had by all.
Me and my fly army.
I fear that would be ineffectual.
Is that not a good book?
Well, against my cat and crow army. I feel like the cats and crows would not work well together.
I feel that could be a problem.
Well, speaking about weather that lies to you and being annoyed about it, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yes, why not? There's loads of them. Hurrah for you.
There are. Hello.
Thank you very much. To the tiny shark and the marvellous hat.
To Newt the cat wizard.
To Melissa Gambrill.
To Hannah Fridlung.
To Elise.
To Julia Havens.
To Made You Read My Band's Name, Reverend Pokemunge. Which I must admit, is not a good band's name.
Oh, wow. Oh, you cut them deep.
Yeah.
Build them up and then drop them down.
You know me, I'm desperately judgmental.
To Cassandra S.
And very finally, to H of the Poison Centre.
Wonderful names this
week. Wonderful names this week.
Well done, Patreons.
Yeah, apart from I just really slagged off someone's band name, so I apologise for that.
Their person is now crying and deleting us from all of their phones. You know what? We'll have to listen to their band now afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, the first album was sort of dedicated to us. Not anymore!
The first album was all songs about you, Nick. Nick, his beard is so lovely.
Oh, I fucked it up. Oh, shit. Sorry.
Excellent, excellent Patreon names. We like it when people get creative, and there has been a lot of you. So, yes, we encourage you, be creative. But also, please send us a note of what your real name is in case we need to send you anything.
Yes, it's not easy to... Yes. Tiny Shark and the Marvellous Hat. Number three.
Yeah, feel free to add that. We'll add it in notes as well. Or if you just want mail sent through to you in that way, absolutely fine.
Crack on.
But, yes, we had fun on Patreon this week. We took a trip to the Arctic.
We did.
We went to colder climates to combat the heat. And we talked of mysterious...
Terrifying things.
Yeah, sort of pretty scary. Yes, lost expeditions that resulted in murder.
What more could you ask, really?
And a return from our old friend Poison.
Yes, yes. There was an alarm.
There was an alarm. It was alarming.
So we did that.
There it is. Also on Patreon as well, all of our subscribers got a lovely preview of new video content that we're doing. So we are doing highlights of our episodes, which we're going to release and tease to people. So keep an eye out for those. Yeah. We also have a shout out this week from lovely Charlie Rose Alice. Charlie Rose has asked for a shout out to her lovely mum, Ellie Norman. Ellie, her mum, introduced her to our podcast while they were doing trips between Chippenham and Derriford Hospital. I'm sorry, I made them very jolly.
You made them very jolly there. I went, oh, shit.
It might have been a nice trip to the hospital. I mean,
who doesn't love a trip to a hospital?
I mean, obviously, that was a bit stressful, I'm sure. And they said, no matter how stressed and worried we were, when we got in the car and played your podcast, you guys always managed to make us laugh and keep us intrigued. I'm very grateful to her for introducing me, and I know you're her very favourite podcast broadcasters ever. Thank you so much for all the enjoyable hours and all the hard work you guys put into it to make sure that they're factually accurate and hilarious too. You're the absolute.
Oh, that's lovely.
Alice.
Huge love to you both.
Big love to you and your mum, Ellie. Thank you so much for being wonderful fans.
Thank you very much.
And we are happy to shout out and say, everybody, praise these people.
Quite.
Worship them. Well, Nick, are you ready?
I think so.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison.
Ooh.
Or could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
What about the wine?
That you're quaffing.
Yes. It's a nice wine.
The pre-podcast wine.
The pre-cocktail has now been surpassed by the brew cocktail wine.
Well, while sipping your wine, what do you think?
Let's have a cocktail and wine.
Excellent. Great.
What could possibly go wrong?
Let's go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so his pick. And the secret ingredient is...
Monopoly.
Monopoly.
Who doesn't love a game of Monopoly?
It's an odd ingredient. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, I like it. Monopoly, the greatest poison of them all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it has caused many...
Greatest motive of them all, I would imagine.
Yeah. Many are thrashing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Many are stormed out. Many are divorced, I'm sure.
No doubt. Many a family feud at Christmas.
Indeed. How are you with the Monopoly?
I enjoyed the Monopoly as a kid because you played it at Christmas.
Okay.
But that's before I knew about other board games.
Yes. So, was that your gateway
board
game?
When I found like, there's more games in the world than Monopoly, I was like, I don't want to play Monopoly anymore. It's dreadful.
But did your family get on when playing Monopoly?
Usually we got bored before the end. It's one of those games that can take 4 weeks.
Yes.
To play.
Yes.
And usually, eventually, someone will be pissed.
usually you. At 7, yeah, swilling your wine around.
And then everyone would go, oh, it's like, well, it's fucking bedtime. Let's go.
When you're a kid, you don't understand. I never understood the whole thing about why you were building hotels. I was like, can we just go around the board? We never really played it that much. But I remember one person I knew said when their family played it, their mum had to always have more money than everyone else because it was her board game.
Right.
That was the logic they used.
That's the house rules.
And it was very humorless as well, apparently. It wasn't done in jest.
If you want to get into board games, don't start with Monopoly.
I don't know. Monopoly's all right. Teaches you greed.
Teaches you greed. And vengeance. And revenge. And spite.
And how to really someone up with a tiny, tiny hat. How you can
kill
a man.
Which was your playing piece of choice?
The hat.
The hat.
The top hat.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm fancy. Learn how you can kill people with little tiny meeples. Okay, well, Monopoly opens up lots of possibilities. All right. Well, with Monopoly as the ingredient, the inspiration, what have you come up with?
We are having a Mayfair.
A Mayfair.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, fuck off.
I mean, I walked into it, really. Monopoly is just like, oh, whatever's on the fucking board.
And I did. The most valuable.
Oh, is it the most valuable?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not just your old sort of Pentonville.
Old Kent Road.
Old Kent Road. Old Kent Road would be good because it's the cheapest.
Okay, Mayfair. I quite like it. Sounds very elegant.
Well, quite.
Sounds fancy. I'm expecting fancy things.
Well,
marvellous. I think it is high time for us to sashay into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, we have the Mayfair.
I'm disappointed it's not purple.
Yeah, I was thinking you were going to pull purple out of the bag.
Yeah, I should have, yeah.
A few drops of something.
Absolutely. Just thinking of it, I should have made it purple.
I'm disappointed you don't have a Monopoly board, but also not surprised.
Yeah, after my bitching about Monopoly, but moments ago.
Why would you not have it?
I don't actually have a Monopoly set.
There is a Canterbury Monopoly set one can get.
There is, yes.
I don't have that either.
No, I don't have that either.
Nobody does. Nobody has it. But it is very, very yellow.
It's very yellow.
Yes.
An orangey hue.
An orangey hue. Quite like an orange juice. It's not an orange juice, is it?
It's just a glass of orange juice.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, just a glass of orange
vitamin
juice.
Vitamin C, not a bad idea. It's very full as well, so I'm excited. Hey. Hey. A long drink. Well, it looks very pretty, so a little smell. Doesn't have much of a nose.
Well, there's not huge aromas coming off it.
Well, it looks very pretty. I think it's time for us to taste.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. What?
Hmm.
Ha, ha. Oh, God.
I don't like that.
No, I went, oh, God, because I've just remembered something that's in this purely because I brought it to you.
Yes.
And it's, it's really hitting now. That's weird.
It's weird. It's,
That's weird. Well, second sip.
It's, I'd say, it's not awful. It's not horrendous. It's curiously fruity.
It grips you by the throat very quickly. And yes, it's curiously fruity, but then it gives way to that. So I'm going to guess one of the ingredients.
Yeah.
It's got a clove.
It's got a clove.
Aroma.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's got fucking cloves in it.
It's got a clove in it.
That I brought from my house.
Yes, I text you, say, have you got any cloves? Can you bring some? Surprisingly, it's got cloves in.
And then I hand them to you and you go, now forget everything you know about cloves.
You have never heard of cloves before.
These are the cloves you're looking for. So that's the thing, is the aftertaste is really...
Clovey.
Clovey. It's like Christmas. Start of it, it's fruity.
Give me something other than cloves.
I'm going to hazard a guess.
Okay.
Peach.
No.
Fuck.
Not a million miles away.
Apricot.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yeah, apricot, yeah.
Hey! Apricot brandy. Is it Southern Comfort?
No, but just apricot brandy.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't know the difference.
Apricot. Southern Comfort is peach.
Is it?
Yes, made peach kernels.
Oh, okay.
But no, this is apricot brandy.
Okay, so there was cloves and apricot brandy. I'm done.
Two more things.
Two more things. It feels like there's a lot in there. I'm not getting citrus. Maybe it's lost. I'm not getting much sharpness, so I guess lemon?
Nope.
Lime?
Nope. are there other fruits.
Is it another fruit?
Yes, it's another citrus.
Oh, I don't know any other citrus. Orange?
Yes.
Fuck! Well, this genuinely happens. I go, there's no other fruit.
There's no other fruit.
There's lemons, never been limes, another fruit.
That's it. That's all there is. Orange.
Right, orange. Oh, yay.
Orange juice.
Orange juice.
Hand squished.
Oh, you were squeezing something in there.
Yeah.
We were having a chat. I could just hear you squeezing away.
Yeah.
Right, so there's one more.
One more thing.
So cloves, apricot brandy, orange juice.
Yep.
And...
Think of a base. Think of something...
Buttery biscuit base.
A buttery biscuit base. There's no buttery biscuits. Now I want a buttery biscuit.
Well, I would think apricot brandy would be the base. Yeah. Gin?
Gin.
Oh, is it gin?
It's gin.
I did well today.
Yeah, not half bad.
Not bad. We got there eventually.
Yeah, it took a long time.
It was a long meandering road. With me being very annoying all the way. But we got there,
we
didn't
got
we?
There
we
eventually.
Got, I got us there.
Well done, you. Well done.
After several sips now to try and work out what's in it.
Oh, there's none left.
It gets better.
It's not that. I won't make it again. It's not awful. It's not exciting. Meh. Disappointing Mayfair.
It's not bad. The first sip was awful, I must say. The first sip was so sharp and then it was just cloves.
Yeah.
So
I'm not getting that overpowering cloviness, personally.
Did you just put more cloves in mine?
Yes.
Crush them up.
Just crush them up.
It complements the apricot quite nicely because it kind of turns floral. That's one of the nice things about it.
Yeah, clovey. I mean, cloves go well with orange as well.
Yes. They do.
In a very Christmassy sort of vibe.
But it's not like the Mayfair expensive, classy. I don't know. It doesn't really seem
befitting
I mean,
of the name. And this is actually an old one. This has come from the Savoy. So this is sort of 1920s, 1910s, this one was first developed.
Oh,
and it was named
that.
After Mayfair being a very exclusive area and blah, blah, blah.
Still is.
Still is, it is, absolutely. But that's where the name comes from. But it's not overwhelming. It's not world beating.
It does seem like an old-fashioned cocktail with just a chuck some freaking cloves in there. How do you do the cloves then in it?
So I put two dry cloves in the bottom of the tin and just give them a good bash with the muddler.
Yeah.
Mash. And then
is that
just
what you do?
Mash. And then poured the ingredients off. I left it for maybe a minute or so and give it a bit of a stir. Mm. So you don't want to infuse too much because it will be too overpowering, I think. And then just strain it out so you don't get any of the bits. So just break it down a bit. That is enough. Just that sort of 2-3 minutes it has with the spirits is enough to impart quite a lot of flavour.
Well, yeah, cloves are very, very,
but they're very,
very,
very potent, absolutely.
You know what? If you swap the gin out for some whiskey, heat it up.
That could be an interesting sort of thing.
Interesting
yeah.
twist on a hot toddy would be quite cleansing and good, and the vitamin C for the orange juice if you're sick.
Very true.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
And I'm going to enjoy drinking it. I shan't be sad if I never have it again.
No, and indeed.
But it's just weird. It's just cloves and ingredients.
It's just cloves and stuff. There we go.
Wonderful. Well, with our drinks, in hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're in hand. The Mayfair, we're in the Mayfair. It's lovely.
Very nice.
It's very fancy. Is it time for a story, Nick?
It is definitely time for a story.
Woohoo!
This is definitely time for a story.
Yes.
So this week, we have the tale of one of the most audacious heists in British history. This week we are talking about the Great Train Robbery.
Of course. You have been itching.
I have. I've been going about doing this one for ages.
To do this one. And I would not have penned you as someone who was a Great Train Robbery fan.
I'm not a fan, but it's one of those things that I just...
Can you be a fan?
One of those things that I remember as a child.
I do too.
Sort of thing. Now,
we're not that old, though.
There are many great train robberies out there.
Yes.
You have the first Great Train Robbery, and then the Great Gold Train Robbery. Michael Crichton wrote a novel called The Great Train Robbery in 1975, which was several years after The Great Train Robbery. The book was about The Great Gold Train Robbery, which obviously cleared a lot of things up about which robbery was which.
What?
So this is about the one that I heard of when I was a kid. The Great Train Robbery.
So The Great Train Robbery. But not about The Great Train Robbery.
Not The Great Train Robbery.
Not about The Gold Robbery.
Not about The Great Gold Robbery, but The Great Robbery.
Good. So everything you just said, forget about that.
Everything, everyone clear? Everyone clear what's going on?
No.
Good.
But The Great Train Robbery. Yay. The great,
but if you are in the UK, you will know of what we call The Great Train Robbery.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It was spoken of a lot in our youth.
Very famous. One particularly famous villain came out of it. Who we shall go on to. But everyone in the UK knows a little something about it.
That makes it sound like we're all complicit.
We're all complicit. We all
knew someone who knew something.
Yeah, absolutely.
About the robbery.
Indeed.
Yeah, we're known in all the boroughs.
So you might know something, but what was it? What was it? What was the robbery?
The Great Train Robbery. Well, to be honest, I really don't know
so
a lot.
You know the name.
I know the name. I know Buster. A film starring Phil Collins about the Great Train Robbery who opened a flower shop. My mum would go, oh, let's watch that. You know, the flower shop's still open. I'll take you there one day. You can see the train robber. Just go and point at him. I know some of the names of the robbers that I'm sure you'll come on to. But it was a big heist for money.
A heist for money, absolutely.
I think that's all I needed to know really about it.
So we are venturing back. All the way back, so far back to 1963.
It's so far, I can't imagine it.
So far back.
God.
Now, this is back in the day where everything was transported by rail. So the motorway network wasn't really established and things like that. So if you wanted to get anything anywhere, rail was the way to go.
Absolutely. Horses were shit.
And the Royal Mail, which is the UK's postal delivery service, had trains that ran all over the country. They had Royal Mail trains. The trains were...
Every now and then, you put it in and go,
every
they
now
had
and
trains
again.
Run all over the country. They had Royal Mail trains.
I feel the need to ad-lib for no reason whatsoever, because I've written it down 3 times in the script.
I love hearing it. I usually ad-lib bad jokes. You ad-lib more facts.
I'm more facts that I've already just said in a slightly different way. So the trains, they were mobile sorting offices, pretty much. So sacks of mail bound for a destination would be loaded on the train. And then as the train went on its way, there were scores of people on the train who would go through the mail, sort it into its final destinations by postcode and what have you. And by the time it reached its final stop, everything was bagged up and ready to go on vans to be delivered out to households. So it was desperately organised. Now, some of these Royal Mail trains ran with carriages known as the HVP, the High Value Package Carriage.
Oh, don't call it that.
That's what they were called, the HVP. The HVP carriage, high value package.
I know, but that's asking for trouble, surely.
So these carriages were stuffed with valuable cargoes. So lots of people sending, expensive things through the post, but also a lot of banks were sending things through the post as well. So this was a time, obviously, before digital transactions and all that sort of stuff. So if you wanted to make a transfer from one bank to the next, you actually had to do it in cash. So these HPV carriages often carried just sacks load of money.
Yeah.
Cash really was king. And so there were millions of pounds worth of notes just going by train all over the bloody place.
And other valuables like cloves and spices.
Cloves and spices.
Sorry.
Spices from the audience.
It was a simpler time.
Now, no one really knows who was responsible for the initial idea behind the robbery.
Is it that dog that's barking?
It's the barky dog. The most common theory is that it was actually an insider job. And certainly the gang had details that would only really have been known to someone inside the postal service. And someone relatively senior, for that matter. Now, over the years, this sort of murky figure has become known as the Ulster Man. Reportedly because he had an Irish accent. He has never actually been identified. A few people in various books and things, they said, oh no, I figured out who it is. It was this chap. But it's never been conclusively proved who this sort of mastermind was.
It's always nice hearing you say the Ulster Man in a very English accent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very different from my crowd. The Ulster Man.
Ulster Man.
Go really deep down here like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to try that.
Please don't.
That would be offensive on many levels, I feel. So the story goes that the Ulsterman, he confided his thoughts in how easy it would be to rob one of these trains to a London solicitor, a chap called Brian Field. Now, Brian Field, in turn, used his contacts in the London underworld to put the Ulsterman in contact with two career criminals, a chap named Gordon Goody and Buster Edwards.
Yay, Buster Edwards. Name.
Absolutely. Now, these two were members of the Southwest Gang. Ooh. It was known. Presumably in Southwest London.
Unless they were very smart and they operated in the northeast.
Absolutely. Could have well been. Really keep them rozzers on their toes.
The police hanging around the south where we've got this entire area covered.
So these two chaps went back. Oh, we've got this great contact. He's got this great idea. Went back to the gang. Soon the gang's leader, a chap called Bruce Reynolds, he quickly takes charge of the whole thing, going, right, yeah, this is great. And with the information provided by the Ulsterman, a plan starts to develop.
You can imagine that it had to be an inside job, the start of it, to have all of that information to go, okay, here's how you can rob them, here's who the night watchman is, here's all the security.
Here's the timings of all these things.
Yeah. And then going through a lawyer, clearly a lawyer who was used to dealing with shady people.
Yeah, I think...
who didn't go, you know what, ooh, you're a bad man, I shall turn you up to the authorities, going, I know lots of crims. Yay.
Perfect person to go to. Now, the raid was devised over a period of months by this core team. So we've got Gordon Goody, Buster Edwards, another chap called Charlie Wilson, and then the mastermind Bruce Reynolds, who are all acting with information provided by the Ulsterman. Now, as they developed this plan, they sort of slightly realised, this is a fucking big job. This is a massive undertaking. And they started, and it starts to dawn on them, they're just the numbers they will need to carry off this heist. So the other members of the Southwest Gang are pulled into the caper. So you've got Roy James, John Daly, Henry Thomas, James White. They are all brought in as various getaway drivers, just muscle men being there because they needed some just threatening thugs. So people to shift stuff around, do the shopping, make the tea. You need people to do this sort of stuff.
Someone buttering a cracker in the
exactly.
background. Also, when you said muscle men, completely get it that you need guys who are like, the heavies.
Yeah.
As it were, I instantly just had a picture in my head of those old-timey kind of muscle men with like the anvils and kind of like the lifting a dumbbell up in like leotards and big twirly moustaches.
It was exactly like that.
Distraction technique.
That's like the Southwest gang. They are very successful.
In Islington, yeah.
In London's criminal underworld. Mm-hmm. They are quite notorious. They enjoy quite a fearsome reputation. Protection rackets, fraud, theft, intimidation, all top-notch. Top-notch criminal activity going on. One thing, though, that they have rather less experiences is with trains. Not so knowledgeable about the trains, really.
Well,
stopping a train, driving a train, robbing a train. not quite sure. So, how does this work?
Most of us don't. Yes. Yeah. How do they work?
How do these things work?
Yeah.
So eventually they think, well, the prize is so great. Rather than just go at it and just
hope
for the best. Yeah. They think, no, we need to get some experts, some more experienced people on hand. So now we have the introduction of the South Coast Raiders.
Ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah, another London gang. Now
they're in the South Coast. There's no coast in London.
London out towards the South Coast, way.
That bit, the estuary,
out towards Essex, estuary, absolutely. Even down towards like Kent, where we are, those sort of places.
Yes,
accomplished train robbers. They've done this before.
Okay.
They know all the tricks of the trade. So these are the chaps we need on board. So in come another group of guys. So all apparently essential in pulling off the heist. We have the leader, Roger Cordry. Then Bob Welch, Tommy Wisby, Jim Hussey and Danny Pembroke.
They all sound like crim names.
Absolutely, they really do, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And actually, also, they don't at all. Just point out, these are just names.
These are just people's names.
But if you say them in the right accent, can you just say them again? And I go, no, you're not going to do it. But, you know, Tommy Wisby. Yeah, yeah. Danny Welch.
Tommy the Slasher Wisby.
There were no Terrences there.
No, absolutely. But these guys, they have the specialist knowledge that is needed. They know how to rig signals. They know how to couple and uncouple trains. They know about switching points on tracks and all this sort of stuff. One thing they do need, though, one thing they still need, is someone who is able to drive a train.
Handy, yes.
Handy when doing
do
this.
All of this, and they can't just push it.
And this is where one of the most famous names associated with the Great Train Robbery comes into play. This is where Ronnie Biggs. Now, Biggs, he was an old associate of the Southwest gang, but he had a recent stint in prison, and he was determined he was going to go straight. He had no life of crime was done for him. He was going to go straight and narrow, blah, blah, blah. It didn't take too much arm twisting and the promise of a hefty payday, really, for Bruce Reynolds, the leader of the Southwest gang, to persuade Biggs to return to his sort of criminal ways, really. Oi. So here, I've got some money. Okay, fine. okay.
It's got to be a tantalising prospect as well, because Biggs, you know, was a criminal.
Yeah, yeah, a career criminal, absolutely.
But in jail, then coming out going, we've got the heist of all heists.
Absolutely, yeah.
Go out on high,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, but his only assignment in this, his one role of this, is to find a train driver. Mm-hmm. Make sure he is ready for the job and he is there at the appointed date and time to be ready. That's all you have to do.
Nice.
And Biggs says, yep, fine, absolutely. I'll find someone, know the chap, sort it out.
Cool.
And he does that. He tracks down a retired engine driver, a chap who is actually only known as Old Pete or Pops. They never actually caught this chap. They never caught him.
Oh.
So, yeah, the train driver was never found. It was never identified who it was. He was an old boy, retired.
Old
Pete or Pops, the gang seemed to call him.
Yeah, had a big hat.
So now everything was in place. They have 16 men ready to take on the might of the post office.
Okay. The might of the post office does not have the gravitas you think it does.
It'd be very dramatic. The post office is a powerful and terrible thing.
Back then, yes.
The post office had their own police force.
They did.
Back at this time.
I did know.
Yeah,
yes,
they had their own investigative unit.
Everything was by post. The power, can you imagine?
Exactly.
Nowadays, the post is going, please stuff through us.
Please write a letter. Please. We'll pay you to write a letter.
Amazon drivers just flicking V's at them as they go. Yeah.
How the mighty have fallen.
Poor postal workers. We're with you.
So it is Wednesday, the 7th of August, 1963. 6:50 p.m. The Royal Mail train sets off from Glasgow. So 10 to 7 in the evening.
I wasn't looking confused because
I thought you were trying to work out what times were.
No, I know what times are.
Well, I'm unsure sometimes. Were you looking at the hair?
I was looking up because you said August in 1963 and I thought, oh, not that far off when JFK was shot. That's where my brain went.
Right. Not.
It wasn't
not
trying to work 6:50 out times.
PM. Ooh, that's 10 to 7.
But thank you for explaining it.
And it's a pleasure.
Carry on. So it's 5 in the morning.
It's at some point in the evening.
Dusk.
The train left Glasgow Central Station en route to London Euston.
Where good station.
A delightful station where it was scheduled to arrive at 4 a.m. the next morning. The train was hauled by a diesel electric locomotive and was made up of 12 carriages. In total, there were 72 postal office workers on board the train. The second carriage behind the engine was the HPV coach, was the high value coach on there. Ordinarily, the midweek Glasgow to London train could be expected to carry around £300,000 or so on the train, which is a decent haul. This particular train was holding over $2.5 million. And that's $2.5 million 1963 money.
Yes, I remember the figure. Yeah,
which is about million. 38 million in today's 38 million pounds in today's money. So that's a huge, imagine that much in cash, in banknotes.
Good point.
That much in tennis.
I'm imagining 2 million. Well, yeah, I should imagine 2 million. Of course, it'd be the same amount of banknotes.
But you would have a pound banknotes back then.
You got 1 pound.
You had one pound notes.
Oh, do you remember them?
It's an awful lot of hard currency to be carrying around the place. A couple of years prior to this, the Post Office Investigation Branch, so the Post Office Police that we just spoke about, had recommended fitting these high-value carriages with alarms, window bars, reinforced doors. They knew the potential threat, potential weakness of some of these carriages. And three carriages had been modified with this updated security system, these security features.
Okay, cool.
Curiously, all three of the secure carriages were out of service on the day of the heist.
Oh, how convenient.
Most convenient. So an old carriage had been brought in to run the Glasgow to London line. Now, some people think this is the result of the Ulstermen's internal scheming to make the job as easy as possible. So, yeah.
To be transferring that much money and then just going, oh, well, we don't have any of the good stuff. So, yes, but it's got to go.
It's got to go. There's no reason that there has never been a train robbery like this in UK history.
No.
So there's no reason to even think that someone might attempt something of this magnitude.
And that's their downfall.
Absolutely.
Plan
so
for
they
the
go,
things you don't expect.
They go fine. Okay, so yeah, so you can take one of the old carriages, it'll be fine. It's no bother at all.
Who's going to rob us?
Well, exactly. So the train is on its way. There are all these postal workers, say 70 odd workers on board. They are busy sorting thousands of letters into various destinations. They pick up post as they go.
Which must be very annoying.
Well, it's great because the trains don't stop.
No.
So the people on the ground, they hang bags of letters.
They're hanging,
and they're caught
they?
In nets yes. as the train goes past. And the postal workers on board can drop off letters in much the same way. They hang a bag of letters for somewhere out, and then it's caught by a net on the bank.
Just hurling shit at
people. So yes, all these letters are coming and going all over the place. But so they're all busy there, sorting out all their bits and pieces, completely unaware of a rather dramatic turn that their journey was going to take. Now, as the train approaches the tiny hamlet of Ledburn, which is in Buckinghamshire, so we're about 40 miles north of London. So the train has pretty much all made its complete journey, so it's not far away from town, from London town at all. The usually green signal on the line turns red. Stop. Now, seeing this red light, the driver of the train, a chap called Jack Mills, slows and stops the train. Now, this is a very unexpected place to stop. He's never had to stop here before.
Yeah.
So he was, something must have happened further down the line.
Okay.
There's been an issue. He's a second crewman, the 26-year-old David Whitby. He jumps down from the cab. He goes to the line side phone So there are telephones sort of stationed every now and
yes.
again.
Yeah,
down
yeah, yeah.
He phones to see what's going on, what has caused this hold up. Mm-hmm. The phone line has been cut.
No.
There is no answer.
Oh, shit. Now probably panic setting in here, isn't it?
He's realising something's not quite right here. And he goes further down the track to investigate this red signal light. And he gets up onto the gantry. And he finds that the green light is still burning away, still glowing away. And it's been masked by a leather glove. Someone's put a leather glove over the green bulb.
Okay.
And wired a battery onto the red stoplight.
Oh. That's quite cunning, isn't it?
It's desperately cunning. Now, obviously, he is going, fuck!
Shit.
Absolutely.
So running. Or you could, if you were looking at that, would you just have a moment where you go, could go back to the train, or I could just walk away.
I could
whistling.
Just stay here and lie down.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. no one will ever find me.
Nope, everything is probably going to work itself out. Well, this is none of my business.
He does not do that.
No, good for him.
He absolutely. He gets down from the gantry. He legs it back to the train. Run to tell the driver.
Go!
Yeah, it's a trap. Fucking put the pedal on it. Just go for it. The gang who are waiting in ambush, they tackle him as he's climbing up into the cab and pull him down. Ooh. From the other side, more gang members are getting into the cab to confront Jack, train driver.
Yeah, so he can't set off. That's
so he can't
thing.
Set off. He tries to fight back. He tries to resist. He is given a belt over the back of the head,
yeah.
and he goes tumbling down. to the floor. Now the cab is in the control of the gang members. They drag David back into the cab. He's there. He's tied up with Jack in the back of the cab, half conscious, groaning away. The other postal workers, everyone else in the back of the train, they are blissfully unaware of what's going on. They're there happily sorting their mail. Blah, 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 blah. All is good. Nothing is possibly. Yeah, it's a weird place to stop, but fine. All is good. Now it is time for the rest of the gang to strike, to carry out their assigned tasks. Men go along the track until they reach the connection between the HPV carriage and the rest of the train. So you've got the locomotive, carriage, high goods, and then 10 carriages
others,
of sorting and all that sort of stuff. They uncouple the train between the HPV and the remaining 10 carriages.
Uh-huh.
No one is any the wiser what's going on. Blissfully unaware. This is where Ronnie Biggs comes into play. He is there. He brings up Old Pete, the train driver, into the cab. They get into the cab. Right, we need you to move the train another half mile up the track and stop so that the HPV carriage is on Bridego Bridge, it's known as. And this spans a little narrow lane where the rest of the gang in a truck are waiting for all the sacks to be chucked down and they can make their escape.
Nice.
Pops has a slight problem.
Oh.
I've never driven one of these trains before. I don't know how it works.
Ronnie, you had one job.
You had one job, Ronnie.
What?
And you got a retired old boy who has never driven this type of diesel locomotive before. And he has no idea what buttons to press, no idea what to do. Ah, fuck. It's really...
What
really?
Had he driven? Steam?
Well,
he's just waiting to shovel some coal, was that
it? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And old-style diesel locomotives.
Oh,
nothing,
good Lord.
Nothing
like
electric. This.
Oh, my
so
God.
This is new and fangled and fancy and high-tech.
It's sexy.
No idea how any of this works. Ronnie's one job has been to source and supervise this train driver. The train driver cannot drive the train.
Right.
And it's like, ah, shit.
Shitting shit.
Biggs and Old Pete, they are ushered off the train. Right, go away now. Go and wait with the lorry. You can help with the loading.
Okay.
Just get out of my sight. Because you have really screwed up here. They have no choice but to press Jack Mills, the original driver, into service. Now, he is still lying on the ground, groaning about this cosh to the head. But they're able to bring him round enough and set off with just the first two carriages. So now we've got the locomotive, the first carriage, and then the HPV, the remaining 10 carriages abandoned on the track with the rather oblivious sorters just going la 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 la, sorting away inside.
I like the song they're singing as well. Yeah.
As the train sets off again, a few of the staff in the HPV carriage, they notice that they have become disconnected from the rest of the train. And they try and use the train's internal communications little thing to contact the cab and go, what's going on? They assume that just the link has broken. Something's gone awry. So they don't suspect anything untoward at this point, but there is no answer from the cab. They try leaning out the windows and yelling, but over the roar of the locomotive, they can't. Yeah. No one can hear anything. So they go, "Oh, it's fine.
It's probably fine.
Probably fine. Something's happened. That's broken. They're going to go. They're going to get help. It's fine. Let's just crack on with what we've got to do." 10 minutes later, the train has covered the half mile to Bridego Bridge, and it comes to a stop once more. Now, the staff inside the HPV are really confused now. What's going on? Stopping, starting, leaving half the train behind. No answer from the train cab. This is all very peculiar.
It is a little bit peculiar.
What's going on here? Then the gang strike in force. Two of the windows are smashed in. Ooh. And men start climbing through. At the same time, others try to break in through the doors into the carriage. Now, inside, we have Frank Dewhurst, who oversees three other postal workers, Leslie Penn, Joseph Ware, and John O'Connor. There's them, and we also have Thomas Kett, who is the inspector in charge of the train for this leg of the journey.
He's not done a good job.
He's there in the HPV carriage going, "Oh, look at all the money."
Yeah, exactly. Probably having a piece of cake.
Having a bit of cake and a coffee and a nice natter.
I need to be around the money.
The four of them, they try to hold off the robbers. But more and more masked men storm into the carriage. Ooh. Now, Dewhurst and Kett, they are hit with coshes. They are knocked unconscious. There are no police. There's no security. These are untrained postal workers. These are postal workers. These are not trained combat people or anything.
Combat people.
they're not trained security or anything like
no,
that.
No, I know.
They have no experience in that sort of thing. They try to hold off the robbers, but as more and more people storm in, they go... And the resistance does not last long.
It would be nice if one of them was some sort of Steven Seagal character.
Exactly, yeah.
Has there been an action film where a postal worker...
I know, Leslie Penn is a secret ninja.
That's it. So, like, you could try and take the money, but I would take you down with me. Or one of them said that and was shit at fighting. Yes. Just ran and slapped them a bit.
Bashed around the head. So the men, they are made to lie... face down on the floor in a corner of the carriage. Mills, the driver, and his assistant Whitby, they are brought into the carriage. They're handcuffed together and put down beside the postal staff. Now the gang, they form a human chain to transfer 128 sacks of money out of the train and into their waiting truck below. The transfer takes about 15 to 20 minutes or so. Now, this is already stretching their sort of scheduled timings. And they, in fact, they leave 8 bags in the carriage because they run out of time to take it all. It is estimated that they move over 2.5 tons of banknotes in this time. Where does a fuck ton of banknotes?
That is literally a fuck ton.
Literally a fuck ton of banknotes.
2.5 is actually a fuck ton.
Yeah, absolutely. 2.5 tons of notes.
That is incomprehensible.
Out of this carriage. On a signal from the leader, Reynolds, the gang abandon the train. Right, time's up.
We've got to go.
They give the staff who are in the carriage strict instructions. Wait 30 minutes, then you can go for help. You will wait 30 minutes. That's it.
Really?
Yeah, they say no. Hold there for 30 minutes, then you can do what you like.
And they just go, how are you going to check? Are you going to hang around for 30 minutes?
These people are terrified.
Yes.
These people are terrified on
the
ground.
They don't want to have a watchman watching
them. Some of their friends and colleagues have been beaten around the head, lying there unconscious. I would sit there for 30 minutes. Yeah. In that situation.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question
terrified.
That they would.
With all that, they pile into... There's a waiting... The truck that's waiting, and also two Land Rovers.
Ooh, nice.
Two Land Rovers that they've got the same registration on each Land Rover.
Oh, beautiful. Nice.
Coming, nice bit there.
Back in the day where you change the registration plates.
Change
that,
your registration
that being
plates.
A big thing in heist films and TV programs in the 80s and 90s.
That they did. The three vehicles, they take off into the dawn, really, now. The whole thing has taken less than 30 minutes.
That's amazing.
To pull off.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible, really.
And I think it's time for a break.
Oh, I think it is.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Nick, we have our drinks.
We do.
We're on tenterhooks.
Yes.
The gang has made off.
They have made their escape.
They've scarpered.
They are zooming along all manner of minor roads and listening for police broadcasts on a VHF radio that
they've got.
They head straight to their hideout, Leatherslade Farm, which is 27 miles from the scene of the crime.
Hmm.
This rundown farm had been bought 2 months earlier through the dodgy London solicitor, Brian Field.
Oh.
He had arranged the purchase of this farm for them to use as this hideout. Now, at the farm, they arrive and they are overjoyed, as one would be.
Yeah,
I've got two and a half tons worth of banknotes.
Tons of money.
Yeah, millions. They celebrate their success and they count their loot. There is discrepancy about the exact amount of cash that was stolen. The press quote, £2,631,684.
Nice.
The police investigation comes up with a figure of £2,595,997. All this is contained in 636 individual packages, individual parcels. The vast majority of this money, the bulk of this money, is in £1 and £5 notes.
Jesus Christ, that's a ball ache to count.
Yeah.
I would give up.
Yep.
I don't care how much money there is. I would absolutely tap out. I'd be like, there's no way I'm counting it. There's no way.
There are 10 shilling notes in there. There is some Scottish currency. There is some Irish currency.
Yeah.
Irish pounds mixed in there. All this as well. So they're there trying to sort out all this.
Sort it all out.
So I think probably the highest denomination you're going to get is maybe a 10.
20 pounds.
But let's say the vast majority, ones and fives. This is businesses who have their takings over the weekend. So it would have been in just common currency that people would have had in shops and things like
Absolutely. There's businesses.
This is not business to business transactions. This is everyday transactions.
Yeah, people had to go to the strip club.
So the cash is divvied up into 16 full shares, one for each of the members of the gang.
Good for them.
And they also have what they call drinks. Into several drinks. Now, the drinks are their smaller bundles of notes that can be used to pay associates, a quick bribe or something like that. So
it's small.
We don't know exactly how much was in this drink.
Expenses.
But there are little ones that they could quickly go, right, you there. Have that, be off with you.
Very nice. Gone. Very nice.
So they split all this up.
I like an expenses bundle.
Each of the 16 core members of the gang was to receive around £150,000, £3 million in today's currency.
Nice.
£3 million.
Yeah, that's all right.
I could probably cope with that, to be honest.
I could probably cope with
probably
it.
live with that.
I suppose I could make some changes.
After all the initial excitement and counting, which must have taken quite some time, I would imagine, the gang settle in. The plan is they're going to lay low for a few days. The robbery had taken place early hours of Thursday morning. They plan to stay put until Sunday.
Good.
At the farm. The thinking being that the police are likely going to assume that they're going to get as far away as possible. They are going to drive and scatter miles and miles.
And they're going to get on boats. So let's cover all the bases.
Exactly. So they think, if we hole up relatively nearby, the police are going to overlook us. That's the thinking,
It's clever. It's quite scary, but it's clever. But nice farmhouse.
Yeah.
Get a roaring fire going.
I don't think it's a particularly nice farmhouse. I think it's a pretty run down, dilapidated old place that they've got. But it does the trick.
They make do.
They make do and they pass the time with a lovely game of Monopoly.
No. God. Of course. Oh, no. What? Someone said it on Instagram. Yeah. Oh, well done, whoever said it. That was it.
So what they do, they play, the Monopoly comes further down the line. Monopoly is there. They play some nice Monopoly while they're passing the time.
Okay.
Passing the time.
Does Monopoly feature again?
It does.
Oh, okay.
They play Monopoly with real money from the heist.
Oh, I love it.
They get rid of the Monopoly money and they go, oh, you've got a shit tons of money.
Wouldn't you?
And they play with real cash.
Oh, God, that is a dangerous game of Monopoly. You fucker.
Stop building hotels
on my land.
Now, I mean, soon news of the heist is all over the country. And it's quickly all over the world as well.
The biggest ever.
Nothing like this has ever happened before. No, no. Absolutely. This is massive. It's like something from a Hollywood film.
It
is literally from a Hollywood film, all this stuff. Police from all over the country, they are drafted in to search, to investigate, to find out what the hell is going on. The Postmaster General.
Comes down in his robe.
He returns from his holiday in Spain early.
Does he? What the fuck is the Postmaster General earning? He's in his holiday in Spain. Where were you, sir, on the day?
He was in Spain. He returns.
Does he please come back in, like with a tan and like a rubber like ring around his middle and his flip flops? I'm here to see justice done.
With an army of reporters asking questions about how the hell this happened when he gets off the plane from Spain.
On one hand, answer the damn questions, you. On the other hand, he's going to go, I don't fucking know. I'm the Postmaster General. All I do is make sure that post goes on a train. What do you think I do for
a
living?
I have a fancy
title for a very boring job. What the hell?
Yeah.
But also, where the bloody hell was he?
Where will you? Where
your people need you, sir. I do picture him in robes.
Yeah. I met him in some sort of military uniform type thing hat with a big feather.
I'm going to say that I think I do know, and we stand with you, that members of the Royal Mail in Canterbury listen to this podcast.
Hi.
I think some people do. We love you, guys. We support you. But please, can you send us pictures of the Postmaster General's robes?
It's great.
Because we know you're hiding oldie-timey photos of this. You've got to have records. You have a big portrait in your staff room. So, yeah.
It's a good title to have. Now, while this is all going on in the press and everything, the gang in the farm, they're arguing about who's going to be the boat, who's going to be the hat, and all this sort of stuff.
Who's going to be the thimble? Who's going to be the thimble?
But they've got a police radio crackling in the background.
Good idea.
Keep abreast of what's going on. And from this, they learn that the authorities have not been fooled by their stay local plan.
Okay.
One of the postal workers who was there has told them about the don't move for half an hour remark.
Well, of course they would.
Yeah, absolutely. But this now leads police to believe that means, they are within half an hour. So they take the view that they must be somewhere nearby because they didn't want anyone looking for them for half an hour. So they must have gone to ground within half an hour.
Yes.
So but that's what they do. And so anywhere they think, okay, this is going to be a 50-mile radius or so.
I'm questioning it. They're right.
Yeah, that's what people think, okay, which is enough. Actually quite cunning.
Because I would have just assumed they were like, let's get a 30-minute head start.
Yeah,
which the police are never going to catch up with us. But
but there are police coming from everywhere. So they're not just going from this place and going out. There are police coming up from London and down
places.
So
they would have encountered them.
So yeah, so if they were scarpering, heading back north or wherever, then
they would have been intercepted.
Their cars are going to be spotted and things like that. But there's been no sightings. So they've gone to ground somewhere. So it's going to be local. So the gang has to get out quick. They think, okay, we can't stay around here any longer. The police, they're actually going door to door. They are searching every warehouse, outbuilding, shed, barn that they can find. They are going to discover them much, much, much sooner than had been anticipated. They can't use the Land Rovers anymore. They think, well, the postal workers, they may have seen the Land Rovers. Yeah. They may have seen the registration. We can't use those anymore. We need new vehicles. We need new transport. Now, late on the Thursday evening, Brian Field, the solicitor, he arrives at the farm. Mm-hmm. It was all scheduled. He arrives at the farm to collect his share of the cash. Now, he is told about the new developments, about we can't stay here till Sunday. We need cars. So he actually takes one of the gang, a chap, Roy James, back to London with him. Mm-hmm. Roy's job is to source new vehicles, to get some drivers, to get to the farm, pick up everyone else, clear everything out, and scatter. Waiting for the new cars to arrive, the gang does their best to hide any evidence they can. They wipe down fingerprints, they cover their tracks as best as they can. Now, soon the new cars arrive. They're driven by Brian Field. His wife, Karen, is one of the drivers.
She's turned up.
And a new associate by the name of Mark. They're driving these new cars. They load up with the rest of the gang and they get out of the farm. They actually go and hide out at Brian Field's house.
Okay.
Well, that is so lay low. You're back in London.
Nice.
Keep quiet. Brian Field, he then arranges for this chap, Mark, to return to the farm and carry out a thorough cleanup.
Yeah.
Okay, you just go back there and you just scrub the place clean. There's not to be a single thing left that has any connection to anyone, really. When you've done that, torch the place.
Burn it down. I was going to say, like, just fire ground. Will cleanse.
Yeah, burn it to the ground.
Okay.
Mark is paid £10,000. 200,000 in today's money for this job. This go to the farm, burn the shit out of it, never talk to me again.
It's interesting because you need it clean, but also the fire is going to attract the authorities.
It's going to attract attention. So you want it clean.
Automatically think.
Yeah, you don't want anything half burnt lying around that's going to link. So you need to get it cleaned out, but then, do the rest with fire.
Like absolutely. Okay.
Now, on the Monday, Charlie Wilson, one of the original gang members, he rings Brian Field to confirm that the farm, everything's been taken care of. It's been cleaned. It's been burnt. All is good. Field, absolutely. It's all fine. Mark was sorting it out. Not a bother at all. And something's niggling at Charlie. He's going, something doesn't feel right. He calls for a meeting with the rest of the gang leaders and they agree, okay, we need to be sure. We need to be absolutely 100% sure this random chap, Mark, who we've never met before, has done this job. They go to visit Field, who is now forced to admit that Mark's fucked off with the money. He's done a runner.
Oh. All he had to do was clean up and then set a place on fire. Yeah, it was a hard job.
But 200 grand, he's off.
Yeah.
He's taken it
cleaning.
He's taken it and run. Shit. Now, Charlie Wilson, he has to be restrained by the others for beating the shit out of Brian.
Yeah.
He's absolutely going to kill this chap.
Because that's evidence,
but the farm is the priority. We can deal with this shit later. We need to sort out the farm. We need to get that sorted. They nominate someone else to clear out, burn the crap out of the place, burn it to the ground. But by the time they are ready to go, the police has found the hideout.
Oh.
I think we're going to have to stop there.
Are we?
We're going to have to stop there. The police are on their trail. They found the monopoly.
No!
Stay tuned for part two.
Nick, is it a two-parter?
It's a two-parter!
Oh, you foxed us there. Apart from anyone who's looking at the title of this where I put part one. Oh, a two-parter. Well, it's such a big story.
I was planning to get it. I didn't done in one, but as I was writing it, going, there's no way you can cram all this stuff into an hour.
The big hunt and then also all what happened with the criminals.
What happened to everyone, absolutely. Yeah. So,
Big story. Goodness me, God damn it, if that man had only cleaned the farm.
The police are there.
The police are there. Oh, God. Can you imagine? Everything so meticulously planned. And one guy lets you down.
One guy lets you down.
And they're there picking through the monopoly. Oh, my goodness. It's such a good story.
It's a, good, it's a great story.
And as we said at the start, it's one that is... Was mentioned many, many times in my youth.
It's sort of in that sort of cultural history, isn't it?
Really don't know anything about it. I did not know anything about it. I knew there was a robbery. Mm. I knew it was money. It was Royal Mail. That's it. No. And you know the names
and
of the criminals.
I know a couple of names. I knew Ronnie Biggs. That's the only name I really knew.
Ronnie Biggs, Shirley Wilson and Buster Edwards I knew. Buster Edwards purely for the fucking film that my mum made me watch seven times. But Ronnie Biggs, but yes, the... Well, I'm not going to say anymore.
What
I'm
happens?
Not say.
What could happen to them all?
Some people will know. But again, in our lifetimes and everything, saw development, yeah. Saw changes and everything that had happened. So yeah, the biggest thing that anyone had reported on at the time, going, shit, there's been a robbery.
There's
everybody.
Been a big old robbery.
Next week, Nick will be back. Double whammy from him for part two. To find out what happened in the Great Train Robbery, what happened to the people involved, what happened to all that money?
Mm.
Yes. If you have questions about elements of this story that you want Nick to cover, please
let me know.
Jump on the comments, send us DMs. A good heist.
A good heist.
We like a good heist.
Yeah.
And this opens the door for many more heists.
That it does.
Are there other heists we should be covering?
Well, there are many great train robberies, apparently.
Apparently so.
So we've got many more of them to cover.
However, though, I would say when we say many more, you've seen one, you've seen them all. Ish. A bit.
Yeah.
There's some in the Old West.
There's this.
But basically the story is there was a train that was robbed.
It's a train and they stole some things.
And they stole some things. Tell us what you think of this episode so far. Jump on the comments of wherever you listen to your podcast. Send us messages on social media, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. Drop us an email if you wish. And yes, if there are elements you're looking forward to in part two, or people or things that you really want us to delve into, send us a message. It's all on Nick to do it.
Yeah, apparently so.
Oh, no, I'm like, fill your boots.
Fill your boots.
Fill your boots. I have nothing to do next week.
You've got till Tuesday, right? You've got till Tuesday to get your questions in.
Indeed. Tuesday's the cutoff. Weirdly, as well, people might have links and connections. It's incredible in the UK how many people say, oh, I knew so-and-so,
yeah,
or I was there, or I was robbed, or that was my money.
I was the train.
I was the train. Were you the train? You as a train been affected by all these train-related stories? Most importantly, consider mixing up a Mayfair.
Yeah, are there other train-related beverages?
Well, we've done train and rail tracks and everything in the past.
Yeah, indeed.
With, I hope, greater success.
We had a Flying Scotsman with the train previously, which I think went down quite well.
Yeah, the rails.
I can't remember what happened.
The rails was okay. The rails, I think the one, it wasn't called the rails.
Sorry. Are there any other Monopoly-based cocktails that we should have had instead?
Well, we've got to think of a secret ingredient next week.
This is true.
So, yes, you're going to have to think
Monopoly
of that.
Monopoly part two.
The drink is okay.
It's all right.
It's, if you're into cloves.
Said no one ever.
Cloves is your thing. This would be one to mix up.
Yes.
If you have toothache.
If you're into cloves.
Some people love cloves. People have clove toothpaste.
That's true.
They do clove cigarettes. Well, I mean, if you've got toothache,
I don't know if you're doing that for the taste of cloves, though, for just the love of cloves.
No, medicinal. It's become medicinal. And also, the hot toddy. Just fucking drink this. I don't know. We're not saying it's great. We're saying it has its uses.
We're saying it exists.
Much like Mayfair itself. Ooh, political. Ooh, social commentary. That's what we're all about. Mix one up, but send us pictures of any cocktails you are enjoying wherever you are in the world. Tag us in your stories on social media. Come and follow us on TikTok, because Nick has made his debut.
Apparently so.
Yes, you're on there now.
I'm on the TikTok.
And people are losing their minds. Whatever we were talking about doesn't matter. Everyone's just going, Nick, Nick. And some new people.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
People going, who's he?
Yes, who's this strange man?
Who's this strange man? Yes, but yes, we're smashing it on TikTok. And come and join us on Patreon if you haven't already for lots more Poisoner's Cabinet content every single week. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week for part two. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Poisoner.